Well, hey there. Hey, Dennis Quaid is here.
That's right.
And guess what? I have a podcast. It's called The Denissance, and I think you should listen. I'm having some really cool conversations with some really interesting people like music legend Billy Ray Cyrus, housewife of Beverly Hills Garcelle Bouvet, and many, many more.
Listen to The Denissance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Zach Selwyn. You may remember me as a host from ESPN, Attack of the Show, or even Immortalized, that competitive taxidermy show on AMC. We lasted one episode. Anyway, three times a week, I'm bringing you the realest fake news of the day. It's the Saturday Night Live news desk, but in an audible format. Listen to the Audio Up News Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Dream Hotel in Hollywood, California, this is Lips LA on Dash Radio.
Oh, there we go. Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back.
Hello.
Welcome to Lips LA Radio. Hello.
Yo, Lips LA Radio, what's going on, man?
We missed you. Randy Jackson in the house. Randy's
what
just...
What it is? What is happening?
Randy's just jumping in already. Like, we're right here and he
Yo,
walks
man,
in.
Yo, man, what's happening?
What a legend, Randy Jackson. We're so happy to have
it's
you
like
here.
It's like a model studio, Scott.
It's Dash Radio, if you didn't know. So I think we're gonna start off everything by saying hi to Randy Jackson. Randy, we're happy you're here today.
Hi.
We love you.
Wait a minute, you guys are kind of color coordinated, Scott.
Yeah, are we?
You and Jasmine, you got the jeans and the blackish shirt.
No, talk up to the mic, bro. We got to make
sure. You guys
got
the jeans and the blackish shirt.
Yep, that's
true.
What
the hell's going on?
He emailed
me
the color coordinations for the show set. You didn't
get
the same email?
Well, you're looking good, I got to tell you.
Me?
You always look good, though.
Dude, I'm just trying to chill and hang and vibe.
You're always very well manicured. So I try. You right?
Jeff? I need a mani-pedi today, though. I came to see you guys instead of going for my mani-pedi, guys.
I want to know your skin routine. How do you keep that complexion?
I rub a lot of love on it.
Oh,
can you spread the love and give me some, too?
Whoa.
Well, I'll take
radio.
Some.
Hello, world.
Well, Randy, thank you for coming, by the way. Randy Jackson, if you guys have been living under a rock and don't know, is an absolute legend.
I don't know about that, but
I got your whole resume, but just a couple key points I want to point out. Clearly, American Idol, What's Up Dog, Journey, which not everyone in the world knows, right?
When
Journey.
The lights
go out,
wow.
go down Sorry.
In the city.
All right, so Randy was in Journey. We're going to go over your whole resume, but actually what I really think is important to talk about today is how do you make it in the music industry today? And there's no better authority on how to make it in show business than you, also being a judge on one of the most popular shows in the world at one point, right?
Well, so, how to make it is a tough one. Scott, you could talk about this too, because listen, Scott is a legendary drummer, dude. He doesn't just like run agencies, dude. This guy's a G.
Thank you. Thank
you know, we got Jesse. Jess, what's going down?
Randy, I'm doing good. Thank you.
Jess, where are you from?
I'm from Arkansas. Deep down in the
Southern girl
cell.
Like me being a Southern boy. Arkansas, Louisiana in the house with Scott.
That's why Scott's we
Scott's got that boogie
right
down
away.
New York, yo.
Scott's going to be the first to go.
Right.
By the way, you have an amazing voice for radio. If I never told you, we hang out all the time, but I've never got to. I didn't even know you had a great voice for radio.
I did radio for 8 years. I had a couple shows, syndicated shows at Westwood One that I did for a long time.
Well, take us back to the beginning, right? Because this is
back to the beginning. I was a little boy.
You know, usually we have like three guests in the show, but this is such an important show that it's the whole show is Randy Jackson today.
What?
Right? Yes,
it's like
true.
Randy's hour.
It's like Randy's
with
hour.
With Scott and Jess.
Exactly. With Scott
Listen,
and Jess.
Listen, man, I was like the Stone song says, I was born in a crossfire hurricane.
Is that where
I was born in the hurricane belt of the South in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Amazing.
You were born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Yeah, that's where I'm from. That's where
I'm
I grew up.
Born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
What?
Oh, my God. I knew we were related.
I knew you guys would be
yes.
friends forever.
Oh, my God. What's going on here, man? And maybe a match made, Scott.
So you guys are both Southern, which is probably both why I like you, because I'm obsessed with, like, Southern accents and things like that. But you were born there, and like, how did it all start? Like, you started playing bass at what age?
I grew up there, you know, like, my brother used to have this little band that would rehearse in my mom's garage. And, like, I fell in love with the bass. It was this band that used to practice, local club band that used to practice in the neighborhood on this guy's front porch. The whole neighborhood would gather around, and this band was dope, called Big Bo Melvin and the Nighthawks.
What kind of music
what a
was
name.
It?
R&B. and a little bit of rock. You know, they play some Hendrix or whatever. And
was that what you were exposed to growing up from your family? You listened to R&B?
I was exposed to that. I was exposed to, you know, Hendrix, Zeppelin, everything. Because the greatest thing about the South, about that Bible Belt of the dirty, dirty, dirty South, is that all music was allowed. Whether it be hardcore blues, whether it be hardcore rock, hardcore country, like OG country, Boom Chick country.
Zydeco,
Dixieland out of New Orleans. It really was just really rich with all kinds of music. I'll never forget, there was a concert, just to show you how crazy it was. Bill Graham Presents is one of the greatest promoters ever, probably the greatest, would have these shows that he'd have the Doobie Brothers and have the Mahavishnu Orchestra with Billy Cobham opening.
By the way, I know who Billy Cobham is because I'm a drummer, and that's sick.
Drummer, right.
He's like one of the greatest drummers ever.
Yeah, I worked with Billy for a long time, so... You had like a fusion band opening up for the Doobie Brothers at Old Blackwater.
Keep on trying.
Yeah, so I'm like, what? Is this band playing a billion notes a second, and then there's Old Blackwater? And I'm sitting there scratching my head like, wow.
But why the bass, right? You could have like sung.
It spoke to me. I started first playing drums. My brother's a drummer. Then I started playing guitar. Then I started playing bass when I was about 14. Then I played saxophone for like 10 years.
Didn't our buddy Steven Tyler start as a drummer, too?
He started as a drummer, too. Right. A lot of drummers.
Jess, you need to know drummers are cool. I already know you know that. But
drummers are cool, and a lot of drummers become the lead singers.
True, because they need to make themselves like, you know, worthy. Otherwise, they get kicked out of the band.
Exactly.
So he's replaceable. He's just a drummer.
He's just a drummer. Yeah, I don't pay any mind to him. He just plays drums.
Is that how people view it?
Kind of.
Well, kind of, but, you know, the drummer's an important thing because that's where the beat starts. That's who's keeping the beat.
Shania Twain, I just saw her in concert in Arkansas, and her drummer is this badass female who has this big blonde afro. And at first I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman because her hair was so big, it was almost swallowing her face.
You didn't have front row?
You know, I called them my VIPs in Little Rock, but they told me they didn't have the plug at the moment, so I was in the back.
You should have called your dear friend Bill Clinton. He could have got you up.
Oh, me and Bill. Yeah, we used to split Little Caesars together all the time. But he grew up. Anyway.
So she's an amazing
drummer.
Shania
was great.
She's great.
Shania was great. I was just throwing in my two cents about the female drummer and how amazing it was to see a woman.
Did she
on the
sing
drums?
My favorite song, which is to me one of the best songs ever written, one of my favorite songs in life, written by her ex-husband, Mutt Lange, one of the greatest producers, my producing mentor in
life.
Def Leppard. He did Def Leppard. Yeah. He did Billy Ocean, this R&B pop dude. He did AC/DC. He did Foreigner. He did Shania Twain. There's no other producer in the history of records that's done real country, real urban, real rock, real pop.
That's true.
This guy is a genius.
Wait. So
what's
Robert Mutt Lange.
He's amazing.
The song was called Still the One.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. We know
this
that.
This song is.
Yes.
Oh, my
God. I
didn't
even know that.
You know what? That's my
you
go-to
guys out
karaoke.
There in songwriting fame, if you really want to know what's the anatomy of a hit song, listen to Still the One. Also listen to Let It Be by the Beatles. These two songs are two of the best songs ever written in the history of music.
I have news for you. When this is all done, we're doing a video of Still the One with the three of us doing karaoke.
I love that.
Just get ready for that.
Uh-oh, your thriller comes.
That's coming. But wait, so to digress, Randy. So you were, okay, so you fusion bands. You're like, the bass is speaking to me.
Young kid. Dream growing up, loved the bass, fell in love with the bass, everything about it. Started taking lessons from that guy in my neighborhood. Started playing in bands. You know, I must have played a million jobs or gigs before I ever got $4.
Like a studio musician, or you were like a live?
I was doing some of that. I was doing a lot of live gigs because, you know, to me, the more you play, the better you get.
Right.
So I couldn't do it enough. Like, I see all these people today, they feel like they're entitled. Oh, man, you know, I think I made them a singer-songwriter. I'm going to play the Hotel Cafe. Well, I played the small nanosecond version of the Hotel Cafe.
So at what point were you like, oh, I got a gig now. I think I can make this into a career. Because were you working like regular jobs when you were doing that?
I was in school. I was doing sports because, you know, I was like a sports head. I was playing football. And
oh, okay. So you thought you were going to get a scholarship or something?
Yeah,
or?
I was doing all of that.
Okay.
But I was doing music at the same time, but I was in a ton of bands because at that time you put together bands.
Yeah. So you never worked in like a sandwich. I worked in like a tanning salon.
I didn't work in a tanning salon or a sandwich salon, but I could have worked in a tan salon because, You know, the chocolate is like the flavor. Right. Chocolate's where it's at, y'all. If you don't know chocolate's where it's at.
You're a really good selling point. Right. Just being in there. Right.
No, I'm just saying I had weird jobs. Did you have any weird jobs?
I had some summer jobs. I was trying to be like a waiter for... I tried to do all kinds of stuff. But luckily, I got good enough that I could play in bands and make money on the weekends.
Right.
So I'd play in all like these big bands or these guys that have like these... cover bands, and I would, you know, go out on gigs on weekends and make money.
So at that point,
at
you're like
a young age.
So now, how old were you?
Yeah, how old were you?
When you
like 15
when you first started playing
in
the bands?
Playing in bars, you know, like the hood bars across the railroad tracks in the South. There's always the undertaker there with the ambulance because sometime during the night, somebody's gonna get lit, somebody's gonna get shot, stabbed, something. So I remember like hiding behind my amp a bunch of times and shooting.
Did that ever happen?
Oh yeah, shooting broke off, you know, and then everybody, he wheels them out on a stretcher and they start again.
Jess, have you ever been? I've never seen a shooting. Have you?
Yeah, in our neighborhood in Arkansas, someone was being robbed and my dad interfered and we were shot at.
Wow.
So yeah, I've seen a shooting. No one got hit. It was fine.
Yeah, well, you know, so I mean, you know, it's just what happens. But you're a kid, you don't even understand. You're just in this club playing. You're like, yo, this is fire. I don't care. I don't know what's going on. I don't know these people.
So at some point, were you like, okay.
So I was the original OG of hip hop, you could say.
And at some point, were you like, okay, well, I'm going to make this into like, that's it. I don't need to do anything else. This is my career. Like, I'm set.
No, you know, I had the duality of sports and music going on all throughout high school and a bit of college. And I don't think it was really until my sophomore year, that summer of college, that I really, you know, I got pretty good. I practiced. I learned a lot of stuff. I had some lessons. I had some great mentors, amazing musicians. And my brother being an amazing drummer, there was a music teacher at Southern called Alvin Batiste. And he was friends with Cannonball Adderley. So I was hanging out with all the jazz guys, all the cool guys. So my brother loved Coltrane. He loved Miles. And I became like a Coltrane freak. Coltrane just spoke to me. And I don't know. I happened into the right family at the right time. And my brother's an amazing drummer. My brother Herman, he's an amazing drummer. He teaches now. He's a jazz drummer.
So was jazz your thing, like, growing up?
Kind of. I started with, like, blues and, like, R&B and, like, rock and that stuff. And I later drifted to jazz fusion.
Now, I'll tell you something weird. But do you know, have you ever seen the movie Bird, Jess? Do you know the movie Bird?
Bird? No, yeah. I haven't seen it. So, Lady Bird.
You know, that movie about the drums.
No, Bird.
Oh, the Charlie Bird. Yeah, right.
Charlie Parker movie. So I don't know. This is a strange, weird fact about me. But my uncle was Red Rodney, who was in Charlie Parker's band.
Whoa.
And Clint Eastwood directed the movie about him. So I also have a second cousin that's the president of Israel. My whole family has weird connections.
So I can do my birthright thing in Israel.
Yes, I'll talk to my dad, who I believe might be in the mafia or something. But yes.
Don't tell anyone that. You only hear this stuff with the lips.
But anyway, so that's awesome. So, Jess, do you listen to any jazz? It's always interesting to know.
And jazz, yeah, of course I love jazz. I guess just growing up in Louisiana, that was like a part of the culture, like you said. Yeah, I think I like almost all genres of music except for some extreme heavy metal.
Mm. Zydeco? You listen to Zydeco?
I love Zydeco. Right. Yes.
That's cool.
Zydeco's Hunter Hayes, remember how he started off?
Yeah, Clifton Chenier, all those boys with the washboard. But, you know, all that music grew out of the fields the same way that rock grew out of the fields, because rock came from the derivative of blues with all those guys. That's why you hear the Stones, Zeppelin, all those bands.
Robert Johnson.
The Beatles,
right?
Talk about all that stuff, because these were guys like, you know, it was music based on a feeling. I'm so tired of working. And moaning in the fields while they're just picking cotton or whatever. So, you know, just a natural thing.
Yeah. That's awesome. So at some point you were like, okay, I'm getting some gigs, I'm getting paid. Now I really can make, like, what was your first band that had a record deal? Or at some point you...
I worked on a bunch of records by a bunch of like old urban blues stars in the area.
Anybody we would know?
I got this gig, Irma Thomas. Who else was it? Lee Dorsey, he had a song called Working in the Coal Mines.
So that was your first... Those are
John
your first.
Fred and the Playboys, who had a... He was in this sort of mock Beatle kind of tribute thing, and he had a song, a regional hit in Louisiana called Judy in Disguise.
Okay.
So he became this big thing, so I started playing with him. We were like, you know, the baddest club bands around.
Right, right.
I was in this band, all the cover stuff. We were like, dope.
And then what was your first taste of success?
I think being in those bands, I think traveling around the South with John Fred, I think my first big taste, after that sophomore year, I really dedicated the summer of trying to get as good as I could really possibly get. You know how you talk to teachers and stuff, and you talk about, like, you should do this. You should do that, Scott. Jess, you should do this. You should, like, learn to do this. This is what you really need to work on. But you hear it, but you're so busy grinding that you don't take the time to do it. So I finally said, you know what? Everything that was said to me that I need to work on this summer, I'm doing it. I don't care what's going on. Dating girls, whatever, clubs, playing. I'm going to stop playing gigs.
So you stopped dating for like 2 years?
No. For a summer.
Okay, for a summer.
I took a summer off. Okay. I couldn't go for 2 years.
Okay.
I took a summer off. Then during that summer, I worked on every single one of those things. So I go back to school in September. And I go, you know what? The first time I really feel ready, like I really got my hands underneath this music. So Billy Cobham was coming to Southern because he knew Alvin Batiste, teacher.
Yep.
He's trying to put together a new band, put together a touring band, a recording band, whatever. So Alvin said, you should come down and interview some of our guys. Came down. I went to this audition with like 10, 12 other bass players.
And you got it?
I got the gig.
With Billy Cobham. Was that Billy Cobham's solo band?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got the gig.
That's awesome. One of the greatest drummers, jazz drummers of all time. Not a rock drummer, definitely a jazz drummer. So we should maybe, should we play a Billy Cobham song or should we wait to more of your commercial work like Journey or Steve Perry? Or,
you play whatever you like, man. This is the lips hour, dude.
We want to play some of your music because I think it's cool to celebrate your life and everything you've accomplished. And more importantly, talk about how did you get to where you are? Like little kids that want to get into this business and want to, you know, be on a TV show one day or be in an amazing band or something like that. How do they get there? So we're not done telling your story. We're only halfway through. But is there a song? Because I feel like we could play like a Journey or a Steve Perry song now that you played on. So throw one out because I don't know everyone you played on.
You can play anything you want, anything that you think.
Well, what, give me a Journey or Steve Perry song that you played on that we want to play.
Journey song.
Here's a Journey song. Where's Steve Perry? Be Good to Yourself. Did you play on that one?
Yeah, you can play on that.
All right, let's play Be Good to Yourself. Steve Perry, Randy Jackson on bass. I don't know how I knew you played on that, but I know that song. So luckily, I know something about music. Journey, Be Good to Yourself,
Journey.
And Randy Jackson on bass.
This is Lips LA with Scott Lips and Randy Jackson.
So cool. Welcome back, guys. We were in the middle of hearing Randy's incredible journey. Me and Jessica were listening to Randy's incredible journey. And we left off at, we played a Journey song, but we left off at some jazz stuff. So take us back through the jazz era of your life for a second.
So my first big gig, I got this gig with Billy Cobham. Then I played with Jean-Luc Ponty. I played more with Billy, did 2-3 tours, 2-3 albums. Then Jean-Luc Ponty, who was also in the Mahavishnu Orchestra, this amazing jazz violinist from France, did 2-3 records with him, kind of stayed in the jazz world for a while. Made some records, worked with Herbie Hancock, worked with a bunch of other jazz guys.
And you must have been good, by the way, because jazz is the hardest music in the world to play.
It's the hardest music to play.
So you must be a good...
I was pretty good at that time. So, but Jeff Lorber Fusion, and that time Kenny G was in the band. So, I mean, I stayed in this jazz thing. But I met a drummer here at the Santa Monica Civic that I'd been a fan of because after Billy left Mahavishnu Orchestra, another drummer joined named Narda Michael Walden.
I heard of that guy. Sting's drummer, maybe?
No, but he's played with everybody. Okay. Unbelievably talented drummer, producer, everything. He was starting a production company up in the Bay Area in San Francisco. I went up, I met him down here, and he says, hey, man, you should come up if you're up. You know, we're starting a production company, we're doing some stuff. Come do some sessions, some whatever. So he and I, Corrado Rusici, and a bunch of other ex-Fusion guys that were jazz fusion players decided we were going to start this production company so we could start making pop records. Sister Sledge, Stacy Light. We did so many records.
Wow. And you played on all these records.
Played on all these records, co-wrote This Is My Time, becoming a songwriter and a producer and a player.
And do you have a favorite song you've ever written, by the way?
It wasn't until we'd done about 30 or 40 records. We were managed by this guy, David Rubinson, Rubinstein, that he basically was managing the Pointer Sisters and Herbie and all these people at the time. We went up there. We finally had a hit when Clive Davis gave us this record to make. He says, I'm trying to do an Aretha Franklin comeback album. And we said, let's see what we can write. Our first big hit was, I'm going riding on the freeway.
All right.
Of love in a pink and
so we did that. Yeah. Huge hit. Huge comeback
that?
For Aretha.
You wrote
I didn't
that
write it, but I played on it.
Played on it.
Huge hit. Huge thing for Aretha. Then the ball finally started rolling. So I'm telling you guys about perseverance because we did 40 records at being musicians at the top of the game that really weren't working.
How old were you at that point?
I don't know. Probably 18. No, I'm just kidding. I was probably
like early
25, 24. I don't know, something like that.
So you're 25. You've done 40 records plus at this point. You've been on the road.
Yeah, but just to say that you think that you're great and a great musician doesn't make you write hit songs.
Definitely not.
People come in my office all the time, I'm the best singer, I'm the best dancer, I'm the hottest person. Doesn't make you write hit songs.
Exactly.
Hit songs are hit songs, period.
Jess, why do you listen to, because you listen to a lot of music, I assume, and I think you do. Why do you think about it? Why do you listen to the artist you do? It's probably because the songs, right? It's always about this. It comes back to this. You love like...
Yeah, it definitely comes back to the song because you can love an artist and then not love their next album and just kind of fall off from right. them for a while until they come back with the next album who's, again, like their songs you fall back in love with. So.
Yeah, you might like the persona of Lady Gaga, but if you don't like that hit song, guess what? You're not listening to Lady Gaga.
Well, just describe what's going on in the music world today. So in the music world today, the song is king, queen of everything.
Better than, more than the artist, really.
That's the problem today.
Right.
So the problem is today, whereas you had the Stones, you had Zeppelin, Beatles, Hendrix, Sly and the Family Stone, whatever music you loved, Thin Lizzy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You got into the band.
Right.
The artist, the pictures, you became a fan of the group. That's why. The Stones without a hit, and they'll probably never have another hit, or a lot of these bands, U2 or whatever, you're still going to go and see them because you fell in love with the band.
Right.
So me as a music manager today and as an artist and a producer and a writer and a player myself, that's what I'm always after because I'm not going to make any money off one hit, especially in we're in the verse of streaming. I can get lucky and something can have 300 million, 500 million, a billion streams, and I can make some money, but that's very rare and hard to come by. So I need you to fall in love so you buy the hat, the t-shirt, the concert ticket.
Exactly.
Years later.
Everything. So, which we would do for Led Zeppelin and the Stones.
I know,
and
but she just identified what you wouldn't do today because today, got a hot song? I'll come see you.
Right,
in
that's
fact,
it.
People love jumping on the bandwagon of ragging and attacking their fellow idol if they're not in love with the music all of a
yeah.
sudden. Like, for example, Drake. His new album that he released when he got so much hate over it. You know, we all loved Drake. And how could we be so mean? And the things that they were saying about him, I mean, it was nothing. I mean,
but then you release one hit like he has and everyone forgets about
hit.
It, right?
Yep, it's washed away. It's all washed yeah. away. Now we're welcoming you back.
Exactly.
What do you think about that? Is that wrong?
It's social media, so right. So for me, I was around when the whole thing started. Social media, the whole thing. YouTube, Google, the whole thing. So all of these new things usually have a double-edged sword. They're equal parts good, equal parts bad. The good part about it, anybody in the world can put up music right now. Any damn body that has a pulse, right. a half a pulse,
SoundCloud,
can put
whatever.
Up 80 songs right now.
Right.
The problem with the whole thing, there's no arbiter of taste. Nobody's saying, hang on a minute. This sucks. You cannot put this out.
No one's A&R-ing those
no
songs.
No one's just saying there's no curator.
Right.
So there's a bunch of crap out there. And so to find the good stuff, it's hard.
Yeah.
So the problem is social media is wide open. So anybody can comment. So people think that artists actually listen to these comments. So stars is what I also don't see a lot of today, which is another problem for me from yesteryear. Yesteryear, you had stars. You had Boy, you had like. Prince, Michael. I mean,
Robert Plant, Mick
you
Jagger.
You don't see that today.
Everyone.
Steven Tyler, you don't see that today.
Yeah.
Stars, can you curse on this show?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Stars give no fucks.
Yeah.
Do you think Drake was really caring about people talking about him? One of the greatest things I learned when I worked with Madonna many years later, she adopted the Marilyn Monroe edict in life. As long as my name is on your tongue, I got you. You could hate me, call me whatever you want. You talking about me.
That's very true.
So,
although you,
all
you don't
press
let, there's a little,
for the stars is good press.
That's true. That, I mean, I do think that we've gone too far in an age of social media where this bullying stuff is not okay. I mean, I think that's a whole nother separate conversation. But
yeah, it's not okay on any level.
It's not okay. We'll talk about this in a second. But rewind for a minute. And so, all right, Jazz. And at one point, how did you get into Journey? How did you get on American Idol? That's
so
all
while I was in the Bay working with Narda, living in Moran, I met all the Santana guys. I met all the Journey guys. And Journey was formed out of Santana.
Oh, I don't
so
know.
Greg Raleigh and Neil Schon were in Santana. Herbie Herbert, the manager, was in, he was part of the road crew in Santana. They left and started Journey. And the first two Journey albums were more fusion records than not. So Tom Costa had a deal. He used to be the keyboard player in Santana. Wrote Europa, all these great songs with Carlos. We put together this little pickup band, he and I. Steve Smith, my buddy, played drums.
Journey's drummer.
Journey's drummer, who also played with Ronnie Montrose and a ton of others. Berklee School of Music boy. And we got Neil to come and play guitar because Neil wanted a place to write, just play.
We're talking about Neil Schon from Journey.
Neil Schon. So we put this band together just to play around town, write some songs, and just to play and get our fusion chops out. We play these shows. Mark Isham, who's a huge film director now, he had another band with Peter Manu, another friend of mine that played guitar in Peter and Billy Cobham's band with me. So we just all stayed close and tight. So in Marin, it's a small community, so we all knew each other. I met Bob Weir, I met Garcia. So me, Weir, and Garcia, and Tony Williams, another drummer,
amazing,
had this kind of pickup side band. We play all these benefits for Bill Graham.
So you played in, you played with members of the Grateful Dead, too, the leaders.
Yeah,
of the
so
Grateful
me,
Dead.
Bob Weir.
Jerry Garcia.
Jerry Garcia and Tony Williams, Joe Henderson.
Wow.
Chester Thompson from Tower Power.
Yeah. Is that on, can we, is that online anywhere? Because I feel like that's...
We would play these live benefit shows. I'm sure there's stuff somewhere.
Yeah.
We do a rehearsal and play these benefits. So everyone became friends. So the Journey boys, like Steve Smith was getting married, it was at the wedding. Me and Perry became friends. I go by to meet the guys. I think they were at the studio that we worked at in San Francisco down in the South Market area. And I think they were recording Any Way You Want. And Perry actually played bass on that, as I remember.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we were just kind of hanging out. We'd become friends.
Right.
So that's how that whole thing kind of formulated.
Started. What was the first song or the first tour you did with them?
First song, I think I ghosted on Frontiers on a couple of songs.
Okay.
Can't remember the names of the songs, but I think there was two songs on the Frontiers album.
Well, Jess, do you know the name of the greatest karaoke song of all time that's also a Journey song? It's very easy.
Trivia.
Bohemian?
No.
Who's Bohemian Rhapsody?
Don't stop.
Just believing. Okay. Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
Don't stop believing, Jess.
Yeah. Well, let's play that song because, you know, it's probably the world's greatest karaoke song ever. And
one of the world's greatest songs, period.
Period. And so here you go. Journey, Don't Stop Believing. This is one you did not plan.
No,
right?
No, it's okay. Way before me. It's a great Ross Valerie playing bass.
Right.
The OG of the band.
And then when we come back, we're going to talk about how Randy got on American Idol and how he got into everything he's doing now, which is a lot of stuff.
Hey there, this is Brandon Boyd from the band Incubus, and you're listening to Scott Lips on Lips LA.
Welcome back, guys. We are here with the one and only Randy Jackson.
Yo,
from
what
American,
it is.
American Idol Journey and much more fame, and Jessica Michelle. Amazing. What's up, guys? Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
Yo, what it is, y'all?
All right, so we just played Journey. I mean, just give us one Journey story before we move on to American Idol. We want to hear one quick Journey story.
One of the greatest bands in the history of bands. So fortunate to be with those guys. I love those guys for life. I mean, what great songwriting. I mean, Neil, Jonathan, and Perry, man. I mean, these guys, God, I don't know. I don't know what I can say. I mean, stories, there's so many stories, but all greatness. I think it was the first time in my life after playing a million jobs or gigs or whatever on stage with them I think at Calaveras County Fairgrounds up in San Francisco, that we're playing this outdoor festival, and there were 100,000 people.
Wow. It was like Cal Jam or something?
Cal Jam.
Right,
one Cal of Jam. Those, yeah. 100,000 people all singing the words to Faithfully.
Wow.
Like,
Jess, that's a good wedding song.
I'd never felt that rush of emotion to see the acceptance of people. This, like, I had tears at the end.
That's pretty incredible.
Because what it meant is 100,000 people loved your song enough to learn every damn word.
That's pretty powerful stuff. I always tell
and
people.
And remember it.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, and you know, the feeling of that is like, you can't ever put that into words.
It's yeah, like, it's nothing. It's like, nothing. It's so riveting because you finally are really accepted for something that you did, that you created, that you really wanted. You go like, yo, man, they really like me. I mean, I'm really, that's better than almost any feeling I can ever imagine being a musician.
I second that. That's the most powerful.
You hold the microphone out and you don't even have to sing the words.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Wow.
Jess is singing now, so let's hope that one of Jess's songs that happens.
Yeah, Jess, when we're getting in the studio, man, what's going on?
We gotta get in the lab. You are singing.
Come on, Jess.
That's on the DL.
Y'all don't want me in the studio.
It's not on the DL anymore, but all right. At what point, how did you get on American Idol? Because at some point you got on that show.
Dear friend of mine, agent, a guy by the name of Jeff Frasco at CAA, dear friend, one of the most uber great agents ever. Calls me. I was doing A&R at MCA at the time because after my Journey days, I moved down to San Francisco. I was doing a lot of work as a session musician. That's when I worked on a couple Springsteen records with another great drummer named Jeff Porcaro. God rest his soul, one of the greatest ever.
Toto's drummer.
And I was working on Lionel Richie record, Dylan records, Elton John, Billy Joel.
Small artists. Like I was just small. I was small artists like that.
I was Billy lucky, Joel, fortunate, and blessed. I was right. Just like
some of the smaller artists on the planet. Yeah.
Me, Danny Kortchmer, and Steve Jordan, another great drummer.
Yep.
Used to do all these Dylan sessions and dates and stuff. So I decided while I was down in LA, I was like, you know what? I was writing, producing, I was doing a bunch of stuff, but I was like, you know what, man, I need to kind of figure my thing out. I don't want to go on the road anymore. I'm done with touring. So I took a job being an A&R person at Columbia Records.
A&R, for those of you who don't know, the people that find bands, sign bands, and develop bands.
Develop them, make the records.
Right. It's like a band scout or something.
It's the life's blood of the company because you make all the product that they go out and sell.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I was doing that. Then I left after 10 years doing that, and I went to MCA. I was at MCA, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years. One of my friends calls me, John Frasco, and says, hey, man, we're bringing a show over from England. You know, it's Pop Idol. You think you want to do a TV show or something like that? I don't know. They got judges, whatever. I go, I don't know, man. Like, you know, music on TV is rough.
Because at that point, was there any other music competition
shows? No, there wasn't
anyone.
But, you know, at the label, you could see putting bands like Blink-182 or Mary J. Blige on a TV show or Common. And you can see if the sales spiked or not. Because, I mean, one of the great things about being in a label, you learn marketing, you learn promotion, you learn distribution, you learn how the machine actually works.
Right.
What makes it work? What doesn't make it work? What's not working? What's working? Because you have to trend forecast and future forecast. Because you sign an artist today like Jessica a year from now, which is quick, as you get the record out, you got to know if the marketplace is going to be ready for what she's doing, the style of music or whatever. So I was like, yeah, I don't know, maybe. Let me know if you bring it over and sell it. Calls me back 6 months later. Bro, we sold the show. I mean, you should really come in and check it out. You know, they'd really love to meet with you.
And you were already friends with Ryan Seacrest at this point, or you didn't know Ryan Seacrest?
I knew Ryan barely because him and LNK were on Star 98 or 97 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd had a bunch of artists and acts on there. I knew him. And I barely knew Simon Cowell, but I went over for a meeting at Fox. Had a good meeting, talked to them, the whole thing, the executives.
Simon was there?
Simon wasn't there. Then I had a meeting, Kyle and I sat at the Four Seasons. We're talking about, because we're both A&R guys.
Right, sure.
So we sat there and we were laughing and talking, came up with some ideas, some concepts, and, you know, I got the gig. I was like, oh man. Wow.
Now, did they tell you who else was on the show at that point, or was this?
Told me some people they were looking at, but no one else was really quite confirmed. But they really were hoping that Paula would say yes.
Right.
Then I knew Paula because I'd known her. I also work with a guy named Michael Bolton, and Michael Bolton, she used to babysit him, or he babysat her, or something. I don't know. Right, sure. Whatever. So they knew each other, so I met. Right. So I go, well, this is going to be interesting. This show could fail or win or lose or whatever. So going into the show, none of us thought it was really going to work.
Right.
We thought, what the hell? Let's take a chance. You never know. The end of the first season, when Kelly Clarkson was crowned the winner.
You're like, we have something here.
We sat there and we were like, wow, this is really going to work.
Yeah.
This is working.
You didn't know that until the end of the first season.
It wasn't crystallized until that moment.
Right.
But you could see during the season, you'd hear people in the street, oh man, I love that show because you're on twice a week.
Right.
And at that time, it was one of the highest debuting shows in Fox history. And, you know, you're getting 25, 30 eyeballs, 30 million eyeballs twice a week. So 60 million people.
Crazy. And you were on that show for 14 years. Me and Jess just figured that we just found out, right, Jess?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
A minute, man. I was on for a minute, man.
And I'm not ashamed to say I love Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson. People wouldn't think I would like that song, but I like that song.
She's a great singer, uber cool person, really smart, amazingly talented. Ooh. I love that girl because she's so damn real and honest. I love her.
Jess, you like that song?
Oh, I love Kelly Clarkson. I love all of her songs. But yes, Scott, I can see you jamming to that. You know,
Since You've Been Gone. Well, yeah.
Who's been gone for you? Who was it?
Yes, Scott. Dish,
oh,
Scott. Dish.
I don't know.
Dish on Dash,
so,
bro.
So, and 14 years, and Jess, I'm sure you have some questions for Randy, too. In 14 years, I got a couple quick questions about that show. Was there anyone on that show that you're like, man, I fucked up. We should have signed that person. They should have won, whatever. And they went on to do incredibly well. Because I don't know everybody on that show.
I always thought Adam Lambert was going to win, but he's gone on to do incredibly phenomenally well. He's an uber talent, amazing guy.
I knew you were going to say him. That was who.
Yeah.
I knew. And you know what? Chris Allen won that season.
Yeah.
And Chris Allen was the lead singer at my church. So we were all every week.
That's right,
week.
Arkansas.
That's
oh,
right.
My God.
Yeah, and that season was very personal.
You know who Adam Alpert actually sings for? Queen.
Yeah, Adam Lambert.
Adam
yeah.
Lambert. Adam Alpert is the manager of the Chainsmokers.
He's the manager
I have no idea why I said that. But Adam Alpert's
a good guy,
Adam
too.
Adam Alpert,
wherever you at, bro? What's up, man, with the Chainsmokers?
What's up? Adam Lambert. Sorry. It's my dyslexia kicking in. Adam Lambert sings for Queen now. Yeah, pretty cool, right? So anybody else that should have, or was there anyone that won that you were like, fuck, this
Jennifer
should not
Hudson,
have happened?
Jennifer Hudson, it was a tough season. We had our own Dreamgirls. Fantasia won that year. But Jennifer, I knew was going to go on the big heights because she's an uber talent too. Listen, we got so many talented people from those shows. It's crazy.
And I want to say my favorite, other than you and you, my favorite human on the planet, you probably know who that is very well, is Steven Tyler. And
I love ST,
and
I think I have a man crush.
It's like a man crush.
Scott has
but
a
he's like
of
my
Steven Tyler
he's like
on
my,
his lower
my
back.
Boy, yeah. But he's also your boy, you know?
He's my boy. I love him like cook food.
I never met anyone so charismatic in my whole life. Is it me or is that guy the most charismatic
Steven
guy?
Steven Tyler is what we call a rock star.
This is what I don't see anymore.
I don't see these anymore. I see all these people. I see people with star songs, but I don't see star people.
I become like a 13-year-old schoolgirl when he calls me. I'm like, I look at my phone like, is he really calling me? What's so weird?
I love ST. Yeah. Where you at, man? You should be here with us on the show.
Now we got to get him on an episode here.
Come
for
on,
sure.
ST. So where you at, brother?
I think he's on tour with my boy Marty Fredrickson right now.
Yeah,
doing their solo tour. But
yeah.
I thought we should FaceTime him or something, but I don't know. At some point, we can maybe see if that's going to work. But
yeah.
Jess, I mean, any other, we got to, because there's so many other cool things that happen from that show. So, I mean, there's got to be for sure some. I mean,
yeah, did you ever have like a favorite, since jazz is so close to your heart, did you ever have someone who really stuck out in your head on American Idol that you would have wished would have gone further, but maybe because they specialize in jazz, the audience
didn't? I don't know if
didn't...
it was so much that, but they just, well, this talks about what's it take to make it in the industry. You got to have unique star quality. You got to have talent.
And what's star quality to you?
Something unique. What's special about you? What's unique about you? What makes people in the room look up, walk up, talk up when you walk in the room? How do you change the thing? What makes you different? Because, I mean, Scott, you and I see this all day, every day. Everybody's beautiful. Everybody's hot. Everybody can sing. Everybody can dance. Why do I care? I say this to every artist. Make me care. Why do I care about you?
You have to give no fucks, is what you said.
That also, but that's part of that charisma star thing. But what makes you unique?
Right.
Why shouldn't I just get Jess? Why should I get you instead of Jess?
Well, she looks much better than me for sure.
And skinny jeans.
Even if I put a wig on, I won't look that good. Right. So that's definitely why. But
you wore red wig, though.
What is the it factor?
Right. So if you're giving advice, all right, there's some people like, I got to get into the show business. I'm a singer. We all know in LA, there's like.
Do you have the it factor? What makes you special and different? Do you also have the talent? And everybody under the sun needs the song.
Right. That's the most important advice I think of.
The song is everything.
The song is key.
Listen, me and a DJ over there could have our own record out. We don't sing or do whatever. It could be a smash. We could give the band some fuzzy name. Fuzzy Dice Tumbling. Whatever.
Right.
People would buy it if they liked the song.
That's true. Well, so one of the last things I want to talk about with you is that the fact that, look, social media is a good thing and it's a bad thing in certain respects.
It's a double-edged sword, yeah.
And for artists now, it's a good thing if you know how to hustle. And I personally believe if you're a really great hustler, Jess is incredible at working on social media and her content and everything.
Yeah, she told me she's going to take over my social media.
She's great. So, like, if you know how to hustle and you can build a hype around you and you do have some quality to put out there in the world, then record labels and people like yourself will pay attention, which leads me to my next subject and maybe last subject with you, but the most famous person on the planet is probably Kim Kardashian. And a lot of people don't know, but you actually helped put that show together. So I'm going to ask you, you've only told me the story 7 times because I kind of like every time we go out to dinner, I'm like, Randy, tell everyone the story of how you put the Kardashians together.
But well, I didn't put them together. They were already a family, but I'd known Kim for a while. She was working with Brandy at the time. And we had Brandy as a guest judge on Idol of San Francisco auditions. Me, Ryan, and Simon were sitting there at lunch talking to her, whatever. And I was talking to her about the family. And I said to Ryan, listen, you should meet Kim. You should do a show with her because he just started his production company at E. So you should do a show with her because this is like a very different, unique family with these girls, this whole kind of vibe. And that's essentially what happened. He talked to them. He was like, bro, I love her. She's the bomb. Like, we should do some stuff.
But he gives you credit. He gives you credit on his radio show for helping to facilitate the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. He definitely gives me credit.
Yeah, so you had something to do with putting it together. They're like suggesting or whatever.
Some in life may say I'm an Uber God or Lord or King or something, but it's okay. I'll take Lord for now, you know. Right. Randy, Lord Randy.
We'll say Lord Randy.
Right.
So then, because you knew Robert Kardashian, right?
I knew the dad. I knew Chris. You know, it's just, you know, from being around LA and being in the mix and in the cut, you know a lot of people.
Yeah, so how has the music business changed from the age of the Kardashians and where it's at now to when you first started playing? Because you used to have, you know, I remember when I lived out here years ago, I had a band. I won't tell you what year it was, but you probably remember. We used to pass out flyers.
Yeah.
And every weekend, the Sunset Strip had like thousands of people with long hair like yours, Jess. I look like you, but, you know, more.
And you guys can't
manly.
Tell, but my hair is really long.
Really long.
Down to the floor. Yeah.
And that's what we did. We passed out flyers. Poison and Guns N' Roses and all these bands.
LA Guns.
Well, that was the band I played with the singer back in the day. So we would pass out flyers. We would make flyers. The art direction was like key. We all like looked a little bit like women. And I guess at the time, girls liked that.
But you guys had a thing, because that was the whole Motley Crue thing. You guys had a thing.
We had a thing.
So that's why you were trying to make it look unique and make it look special and interesting, because I do believe if you're going to do a show and you're playing shows, what am I coming to see? What am I paying to see? Just some regular dudes on a regular stage wearing regular shit?
No, it was a show. And that was, listen, that's why I grew up on Kiss and Aerosmith and Zeppelin and all these bands. That was a rock show.
Right.
I don't even know what bands look like these days. I mean, I'm not going to mention
any
names.
That's part of the problem. That's part of the issue.
I could throw out 50 bands right now, Jess, and you tell me if you know what they look like, because I'm pretty sure that I don't know what they look like either, right?
Right.
There's certain bands.
You have a visual image of a band?
Yeah, it's so hard. So if we had to give one great piece of advice to kids that want to get into the music business now from you is like, obviously, what do they have to do? They have to find the song, right?
You got to find the song, but first of all, what makes you unique, and do you have really the stamina to really take the no's that you're going to get 100 million of them before you get two yeses? Are you really... It's something that someone said to a band I was working with in Dallas when I was at Columbia Records. Guy opens up the door with the studio. His name is Willie Nelson. And he saw him in the band. Oh, my God, it's Willie Nelson. So he meets them. So he closes the door, but then he opens the door really quick and says, it's not whether you want to do it. Do you have to do it?
Mm.
So do you have to do this? Does your life depends on this? Are you never going to give up? Are you going to die trying? Then get in it. If you weak conviction and you're just doing this to like try and like get chicks or get dudes or whatever the hell, or try and become rich, next.
Exactly. I actually never had a plan B growing up. Did you have a plan B, Jess?
I didn't have one either.
You have a plan B?
No, just being a rich, hot housewife.
How many kids, though?
Ew, no, none.
No kids?
No, I'm just kidding. I had a child already. No, I
but
never
you have a child?
Yes, you I have a 9-year-old child.
You do not, Jess.
She does. She
I
does.
Do. The
Jess.
Show is
Jess,
about me,
I
Randy.
Like you now. I like you even more.
But can I just tell you something?
You
Jess.
You have procreated, Jess.
I sure did. Yeah. He's alive and kicking.
But, you know, and kind of talking what we were talking about, Jess was on Top Model years ago, and I didn't know that when I even met her. Like,
well, that's where Jess and I met, because I was on there too, but the male version, but then they kicked me off.
Oh, you were on America's Next
Male
Model. Top Male Model, right? So Jess, actually, what season was that again? Three or something?
Season 14.
Won that season?
Krista White.
Yes.
You remember? Yeah, Krista White. The difference between Top Model, they're both hit shows. Everybody tunes into them. From what I've seen, is the winners from American Idol have longevity in their careers. And America's Next Top Model, it's a hit and miss sometimes. It doesn't even matter about the end game. It's really just for the entertainment of the show and like how exciting it is. But that is something that I've noticed
like
with
that.
Reality TV, where it's a competition, where you have something where you're trying to win something. American Idol is one of the shows that people really built a career off of after the show.
Yeah, because I think it's different. You know, I mean, music's been around a long time. Modeling's been around a long time, but I think it's harder to probably make that thing as a model go. But listen, you certainly have done it. A lot of other girls have done it because you've used social media. And for that, it's really good because it tells brands that you have saleability. And they go like, oh, shit, well, I'm going to get to do this campaign. I'm going to get to do this and pay her that. The music thing, you know, if you look at all the idols, though, we're more successful than any other show, primarily because Paul Abdul was a star, is still a star, knows what that's about. Mm-hmm. Seacrest is in radio. Me and Kyle were A&R guys. So before somebody's hand touched the door and we saw their face, as soon as we saw their face, 40 boxes would go down by their head. I'd go like, eyes too close together, bad posture, needs a complete makeup, hair's a mess.
Funny. Crazy.
Like, what are those shoes? Like, no sense of style, fashion. So right. There's a saying in the old days, you got to walk in here with it. If you don't walk in here with it, you ain't got it. So I shouldn't have to give it to you. Stars are born. Steven right. Tyler was born with that.
I mean, there's
nobody
made
him that. Mick Jagger was born with that.
Totally.
You know, Prince was born with that. Michael Jackson was born. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So that's part of the issue. So we, as soon as they open their mouth and sung, we could tell, oh, bad low register. High register is okay. But we're already in our minds thinking this kind of song or that kind of song maybe could work for them. Because we've been doing this all our lives. I did it for myself as a musician. So I can see. So people always like, I'll go to a show to see some new act and I'll hear like a half a song and go, got it. What do you mean? We just got here.
I'm out of here. I don't need
I already this. Know what. Yeah. I kind of know what this needs to make work. Because, you know, you got to look at why isn't this working?
So within 30 seconds, because I kind of, even when like a model walks in the door, I feel like I can kind of tell within like 30 seconds if the vibe, the attitude, the hunger, the,
Bob
you know, the
Fosse,
look, the whole package is there.
Bob
right?
Fosse would say this about dancers. You didn't walk in here with it. I don't like the way you walk. Next.
Wow, that's crazy.
So the model, you see them all the time? You see them coming in, okay, like, you got any swag?
Yeah, exactly.
Or you got no swag, or you just beautiful, and you just look great in photos, and, okay, I guess it's just for print. I guess you can't walk. I don't know if you can talk. I don't know if there's any swag. See, Jess has got swag.
Yeah, it's
so
called
that's
the,
what I'm
it's
saying.
Like the it factor. You either have it or you don't have it. You can't really put your finger.
I'm born with that.
Right. Twirl in to every door I walk through. I twirl.
I see that. I can see that.
So and you do like Cardi B, you twerk and twirl?
Right through the door with my arms spread wide like this, you know.
Wow.
You are
that's
awesome.
How I booked America's Next Top Model, I swear.
I believe that. And today, Randy, so you're managing acts today. You're managing chefs. You're managing, I mean, tell me everything.
Writer, producers.
Take us up to today, right?
Manage a bunch of writer, producers, 5 artists, 5 chefs. We do a lot of branding, licensing. We pitch a lot of TV and film.
I'm thinking I have dinner tonight at the restaurant. Do you work with the chef from Tessie?
From Tess. You going to Tess
tonight?
I'm
going to Tess. Don't you work with the chef?
I don't work with them, but okay. My friends developed that restaurant and put it on, and they're
I saw you there.
The owners, yeah.
We ran into Helena Christensen there.
Yes,
the other day.
Yes.
Right.
Tess is cool. Amazing.
Another Lips client, Helena Christensen.
Talk about an Uber model.
Icon.
Yeah. I said that to her. I said, you're a legend. No, I'm not a legend. No, you are. You're a legend. Not a legend. You're a legend.
It was cool. So, all right. So we're going to play an artist now. Just tell us a little bit about this artist that you manage.
So this artist's name is Justin Gesso. He had a huge hit about 9 months ago with Kygo, a song called Stargazing that he co-wrote and he's featured on. He's on tour with Kygo right now. But he signed to Sony Europe and he's starting to blow up. And this is his first single, My Body.
All right. We're going to play My Body. We're going to come back and wrap it all up with Randy Jackson.
This is Lips LA on Dash Radio.
And Scott and Randy Jackson. And we're back.
Yeah, y'all. What's up?
Everything's good. So, man, this has been such an incredible hour with you, Randy. I mean, I will say we are like complete, you know, we're boys and we live like in the same place.
Dude, we're bro. Like, Scott is my bro, you guys out there. Come on, man.
We're almost roommates. We kind of like.
I know, man. Should we get like a crib at the beach and like a white unmarked van?
We actually did talk about getting a place together, right?
Weird. Let's do a place at the beach, man.
Okay, well, we should.
I'm in. Let's
we can throw
do
a bunch
it.
Of parties.
Too. Yeah, I love it. I
like, wild out.
I think we should, but. We learned a lot today, obviously. I mean, Randy, thank you so much for coming in. And by the way, you guys all follow Randy. Do you do your own Instagram, by the way?
No, I have some people that do some people, yeah.
I'm always tagging Instagram. Randy, and I'm like, does he look at it? I don't know if he's looking at it or not.
I don't
you know?
Really, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, but yeah, it's you great got, though, but yeah.
You tag me, but I don't look at it, right. Randy's like, what? So, it's been amazing. And Jess, yeah, I mean, it's been like such a fun, it's always fun.
Jess, follow me.
I am already following you.
You guys took a picture together with James Goldstein at the photo show.
Come on, Jess Goldstein, that's a G right there.
He reposted.
Yeah, that was cool.
Look at him.
That's like validation in our society,
dude,
right?
He is a G.
We can all move into his house,
It's a great house.
It's a great house. But he donated that house to LACMA. I don't know if you guys know that.
He did?
Yes, he did. Well, I mean, not now. I think when he moves out or something.
Wow.
Well, maybe not moved out, but something. When
some
he's not,
people
let's
donate
just say
old
when he's,
clothes.
Yeah, when he's not there anymore. I don't want to say why. Let's just say.
Yo, he loves art then.
He does.
He donated.
He does.
I love art too, man.
Yeah.
You guys, Scott, have you been down to see my boy's art exhibit, Beyond the Streets, Roger Gassman?
Yes, it's very cool. Jess,
Roger
have you been there?
Yes, I've been as well. It's incredible.
What a cool
incredible
exhibition.
Raj. Yeah. Big ups, brother.
Yeah, and follow Randy Jackson on Instagram. I'm sure you guys are all following Jessica already, and we're going to heavily promote this. And so, yeah, Dash Radio, thanks for having us. We're live from the Dream Hotel. We want to thank Randy Jackson. We want to thank Jessica.
Thank you, guys.
Scott,
thank you for tuning in.
Jess. Ski, where you at, man? Holla at your boy.
It's been real. And I want to close the show playing Ape Ship. I like this. I'm digging this new Jay-Z Beyonce song. I think it's called The Carters. So
produced by Jay-Z, Beyonce, and Pharrell. Give a big shout out to Pharrell.
Shout out to Pharrell. And here's Ape Shit. And see you guys later. Bye.
Woo!
My name is Zach Selwyn. You may remember me as a host from ESPN, Attack of the Show, or even Immortalized, that competitive taxidermy show on AMC. We lasted one episode. Anyway, 3 times a week, I'm bringing you the realest fake news of the day. It's the Saturday Night Live news desk, but in an audible format. Listen to the Audio Up News Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Dennis Quaid here, and I want to tell you about the Orange Tree. Now, I have recently started a podcast network called Audio Up, and much as I prepare for movie roles, I've been researching the podcast landscape and listening to hundreds of podcasts. One in particular stopped me in my tracks. The Orange Tree. It's a true crime podcast series told with such authenticity and care by Haley Butler and Tinu Thomas, 2 journalists who were University of Texas students when they started reporting on the story. It's about the 2005 murder of a young woman named Jennifer Cave near the University of Texas at Austin campus. What struck me most was the thorough examination of the case and the exclusive access granted to these two young reporters. What makes this true crime story so unique is their perspective. They're two young women who are the same age as Jennifer Cave and at very similar points in their lives. The Orange Tree is engaging, it's thoughtful, and really, really powerful. Take a listen to The Orange Tree on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts today.